It's Wednesday, December 5th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 81 of Fear the Booth, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Adam.
My name is Luke.
My name is John.
My name is Carla.
And that's right, we've got Carla on for one more episode before she's probably going to disappear back into the ether again because...
See ya, X-chromosomes.
That nameless void dimension of estrogen back to which she melts.
But before we get into the things that Carla's involved in, there's something that I have to set straight. And we have made an agreement amongst the hosts that we will allow the Hunters Hunted debate to end.
You mean I told you not to bring it up again?
Yeah, because we've had enough of that on air. But there is something I have to clear up.
Let me tell you, it goes on quite a bit off the air,
though. It goes on in my car, in Dan's car.
It was the
second most brought up topic this evening.
But there is one thing I have to clear up, because I have gotten multiple emails on this where people have written me telling me there is no such game as the Hunters Hunted, that that's just a scenario in Vampire. And the game I'm thinking of is Hunter the Reckoning, and folks, that is not correct.
You are. I will confirm with Dan, we are united on this front, you were wrong.
Yeah, there was a book published by White Wolf in 1992 called The Hunters Hunted, which was an entire source book about playing mortals with Uzis and Faith, settling the score with the undead. That book was dropped and was revised into Hunter the Reckoning, which I think was released in 2001. And Hunter the Reckoning is a completely different game because you are not playing a normal Joe. You're playing a guy who has these divine powers.
You've been imbued.
There was a real game, standalone, called The Hunters Hunted. I will put a link to it in the show notes to prove that. I am not misquoting the title of a game.
When I was in college, that was probably the most popular vampire source book. Everybody loved Hunters Hunted and wanted to play mortals hunting vampires after that because Faith is so damn powerful.
Yeah, and it was a fan. But anyway, all right.
This doesn't bother Dan at all.
All right, we've got word from good old Mr. Perez over there. Senor Perez.
Again.
Over there with the Gamer Traveler and also with High Moon Media. And he wanted us to mention that if you live in the Miami, Florida area, there is a convention coming up for you guys called The Summoning 2007, where they're going to have a whole bunch of games like Witch Hunter, Living Greyhawk, Living Arcanus, etc., etc. And this is going to be on December 14th through 16th.
December 14th, that's the day my brother's getting married.
I think that's
I have a final that day.
I think we're picking up our new cats.
We're getting Orlando.
I'll be in Kentucky.
Oh, God. So, why are you going to be in Kentucky, Luke?
My sister-in-law's graduating college.
That's a terrible, terrible reason to go to
Kentucky.
That's
right. That's the lame reason why you can't go with us.
Yeah, because I want to go pick up cats. I do want to see Uncle Boot. I don't want to pick up cats.
They're not seeing Uncle Boot.
We're not seeing
what?
Uncle Boot.
What? You're not going to see Uncle Boot now?
No.
What's
no.
even the point of going?
He decided his family was more important than us.
Chris, we are his family.
Yeah, exactly.
This is wartime. Take off that helmet. For all you viewers at home, I'm wearing a black helmet.
Yeah, a black army helmet, since there's no... cameras
see,
here.
Taken off the chin strap.
I have loosened the chin strap. I'm going into a more informal helmet wearing domain here. I heard a shotgun clacking 3 or 4 times when I listened to the last episode.
Yeah.
And you were correct, Adam. I would have rather been in Luke's butt than at the LSAT class. So it was.
I usually am.
All right.
By the time this hits the air,
butt?
I will have already taken it.
I'm so actually really glad you brought that up because I was going to forget it.
So if you're in the Miami, Florida area looking for a gaming convention, check the show notes. We'll have a link to more information. And also keep your calendars clear on March 8th, 2008, Fear the Con. We're going to have a bonus episode soon. We just had a meeting, hammered out a whole lot of details.
Drank some tequila.
I've actually already released some details on the forum.
And so we're going to have a bonus episode soon where we give a whole lot more information. But in the meantime, keep your calendars open for March 8th, 2008 for Fear the Con. Now, a pressing debate that does not involve Hunters Hunted.
Thank God.
Has arisen with amongst the podcast hosts about...
over the issue of the ridiculousness of extended universe apology for grievous factual errors within Star Wars.
Because in Star Wars, Han Solo talks about the Millennium Falcon.
We're going to have this debate in less than 8 parsecs.
Yeah, doing the Kessel Run in some number of parsecs. As if that's a speed record, except a parsec is a unit of distance.
Adam contends this is not a ridiculous error made by my favorite species of whale, George Lucas.
He's hunted in Iceland.
Dude, I mean, your wallet right now,
do you or do you not carry around a Decipher Star Wars card?
This is like saying...
With my Han Solo on it.
Yeah, this is like saying my car is really fast because it made the drive to Springfield in 200 miles.
The Decipher Star Wars Kessel Run card clearly tells us that the parsec
this
is
was what you were waiting to drop on me.
Yes, that's why Decipher I almost
Decipher Star
take
Wars cars mechanics.
Yes.
Do you know how horrific they are about the trench run and about the Death Star blowing up a planet? Citing Decipher as canon is like, I don't even have an analogy for this. It's just terrible.
I'll go ahead and accept that.
It's like using a monkey to wipe your butt.
Or baking poo as chocolate cake.
I would say like crapping butterflies, but I do that every night.
That's the second time you've used that today.
I know, but I didn't use it on air, so it's the first time.
It's the first time anyone knows about it. And it works.
Paula laughed.
All right, I'm waiting, Adam. You said you had this brilliant rebuttal.
No, I've already done it.
That was the whole rebuttal.
Yeah,
that was his mighty Maginot line.
In his defense, he did tell you it would be short.
Yeah, you're like, well, let's put this down as a topic, and I'm like, this is not going to be a topic after I had demolished it from Belgium.
This was the charge of the Light Brigade.
Yeah, it was
noble yet pointless.
That was not the Wookiee defense.
Hey, I told you
the Wookiee defense was stronger.
You off air, you at least had some slightly less weak defense about how it involved black holes or something.
No, I gave him that because that's the standard EU apology. The answer is that there's so many black holes in the Kessel Run sector that like you skirt them and you wind up taking it in less distance. Now,
but once again, how that would prove your ship's fast versus your good astrogator.
Well, I think. Well, no, he wasn't talking about himself. He was talking about the Falcon.
Yeah,
he was talking about
the ship.
And that's another hole. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah. So
George, you have a lot to answer for.
I was just making fun of this, and then I was so shocked to hear that Adam say that he had a defense for it. I had to see where this went in the answer.
I have had this fight with Phil, and Phil put up a more lucid, coherent argument than you did. That's awful.
Do you remember the time Phil and I got into an argument where he tried to tell me, absolutely convinced, water is an acid?
Yes, I do.
Phil, could you just say that? It has H as its first chemical component. Phil, we cannot have this discussion.
You know that acid hydrogen just burning through
really?
The whole world.
Because it has oxygen hydrogen as the last two, which makes it a base. Oh, wait, they cancel each other out. It's neither.
No, it's a neutral.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the noblest of gases.
It's a polar molecule, so it has some strange behaviors. But
what?
Yeah, it is.
Water's not a gas.
I'm talking about hydrogen. And it's not a noble gas either, is it? No, I've looked at my periodic table in years, but it's not, I don't think.
It's on the left. I'll cut that out.
Yeah, you're right. It's way over on the left.
I'll do you a favor and cut that out so nobody knows.
You're a noble gas.
I have noble gas.
You do have extremely ignoble gas. Ignoble. Okay. On the online reputation chart of ass, your gas is like a dreadlord.
Dreadlord. The best part about the periodic table is the noble gas is because we have a clear hierarchy. Clear.
You whipped out your phone. Are you going to look this up online? Just sound intelligent.
Phone is from 1992. It does not go on.
It has
no,
the periodic
it's not.
Table.
I have the same phone you have. It's from 2006.
I say 1992. Like that's back when cell phones.
The bag.
Like,
the bag is in my car.
That's the Admiral Adama phone. He picks it up. It's huge.
They look like police walkie-talkies, and they had these like giant modules in your car. You had
I'm calling you from my car.
That's my favorite part about Battlestar Galactica. They have technology that is worse than we have today.
I find it interesting though, because for example, and this could tie into a whole thing on sci-fi, but I've always found it interesting that like in Civilization, you are required to follow human history in terms of technology. The technologies that don't necessarily form a line of necessity, you have to follow to get from one to the next.
No, you don't. It just takes less beakers to progress.
Well,
making a strategic decision to invent the internet before you invent the wheel, ridiculous.
That I don't have a problem with sci-fi where they have faster than light drive, but haven't figured out cell phones. Because, I mean, if you look at even our technology today, we are so ridiculously advanced in some areas, and yet, like in power generation and batteries and such, our technology sucks.
To be fair to the Galactica, how could they have a satellite relay of telecommunications that followed them around on their FTL jumps?
Yeah, well,
I've heard...
That's what we call a plot hole.
No, it's not.
They have wired phones.
Like a Kessel Run.
Well, yeah, that is a plot.
I've heard a rumor that one of the Final Five is not what was revealed, but is in fact a Bluetooth phone.
The Last Cylon?
The Last Cylon.
Luke, that was not nearly half as funny as I think you think it was.
Well, it would have been better if the dog wasn't whining behind me. I was all worried.
They're not whining. They're playing.
They're monsters.
Playing.
They're having their dinosaur war.
Yeah, they're having a little
they're
dinosaur war.
They're playing dog the humping.
They're not lesbian dogs.
How is that a dinosaur war?
That is dinosaurs. Second base the licking right there.
Second base the
licking. I've seen them perform third base the licking on themselves. Not even lone wolfing. One man self GM.
Tissues of lies about our
dogs. Auto GMing. That should be illegal and is probably prescribed by most major faiths.
A lick your own adventure. Alrighty, today's main topic is trying to explain role-playing games as a hobby to outsiders, to people that don't play role-playing games.
Carlo, we sit around and play pretend like a bunch of freaking four-year-olds.
But
true, with rules.
Before we get to that...
And beer.
Before we get to that, I was asked...
I had beer when I was four.
That explains the stunted growth.
And the helmet.
Oops, that was censored.
There's something for Adam to do.
Frack you.
That is the most annoying thing. Can I just
that is the most annoying thing.
My wife hates that, too. Yes. My wife hates frack.
I love frack.
I hate it. It sounds terrible.
So before we get into that, we were going to talk about, I was asked right up there, some of Carla's newbie gaming experiences.
Come on, Carla, tell
and
us.
I'm
going
to pass
dirt.
This to Luke, because what? You were the one that asked.
Well, we talked about this last week. Do we need to get Carla on to talk about the firsthand experience of gaming, you know, being a new person with a bunch of experienced gamers? You know, you're a relatively new gamer.
So go ahead and tell us about that, Luke.
Yeah, tell us all about it.
Yeah, Luke. Well, there's not that much to tell since, like we talked about last episode, every game that I roll a character for never comes to fruition. But I did do one campaign with Dan. It was a Star Trek game. I guess it was original Star Trek, right?
It was set in...
TOS?
Well, no, it was set more like in the movie era, like Wrath of Khan sort of thing.
Okay.
Khan! I was going to do that, but I held back, and I'm disappointed you went there. Fully disappointed.
You loved it.
Okay, I did.
Ricardo Montalban. Fake muscle suit
yes,
or not?
With a fake muscle suit.
I say no. I think that was authentic.
Yeah, sure.
I only missed tattoo.
How old? Yeah.
He was like 62.
Oh, man. With we need to do a chest. Whole episode of gamer conspiracy theories.
That would be funny.
Bonus episode.
All right, go on, though.
Well, anyway, so really just went through one full campaign with Dan, the original series in Star Trek. And I guess the hardest thing for me being a new gamer, actually never even knowing anything about role-playing games prior to meeting Dan, it was just a very awkward experience. For someone who's never done it before, it's very intimidating to sit at the table.
Why?
I'm getting there.
I think you're intimidating her.
Yeah, you're intimidating her.
Answer me now.
I think this is the answer.
Problem solved.
So much pressure.
Marry me.
I was intimidating.
Let me guess how this went. Marry me. Okay.
Yeah. Shotgun noise.
Shotgun noise episode counter now sits at 2. I've just declared it started.
So I think my brother played as well for a few games, and it was just intimidating because Tim and Mike were actually in character. They were talking like they were somebody else. Dan was talking like he was somebody else.
Ooh.
And Dan's really good at that, of coming up with voices and acting them out. And I was like, what the heck did
I do? Do you do little like kobold voices, Dan?
In Star Trek?
Yeah.
No, not particularly.
He did a lot of old man voices.
He does have
that,
very
isn't that his normal voice?
So it was just really weird because I'm like, I'm not getting... it was just creepy. I wasn't going to get into any kind of a voice. And I was playing some like buff Betazoid. I know Betazoid wasn't in the original series, but Dan made an exception for me because it's all I knew.
Were you in your Betazoid period? You know, the Betazoid females go through this
the
gestation
period
where they... Like, 5 times horniest level or something?
No, no.
They don't tell the males about it because they'll be afraid of them? Whatever.
No, I wasn't. Sorry.
I don't recall specifically, but she got to play what she
I'm
wanted,
exactly
so the
excited.
Answer may be yes.
That's good.
So, I just didn't act her. I didn't
we
act
should have
up.
An entire episode about stupid plot things. Because that's
we
one
should have an entire episode of you saying we should have an entire episode.
Yeah,
about every
that seems to be that's your shtick now,
Adam.
Hey, let's have an episode.
That's
about
my
this.
Move. That's my role. But
well, he's only got one move
all night.
You should see me at the club. That's how I walk around. Hey, we should do an entire episode.
Yeah,
me
and you.
We should do an entire episode about me getting your number. What do you say? You know what? Let's write the plot synopsis now.
What's a worm for?
What's a worm do?
What's a worm do not work for? Sorry.
So, no, that's fine. There's really nothing else to say related to what made me uncomfortable or what made it intimidating. It was just that, I guess.
Probably Dan's presence.
Well, yeah. But the dice rolling was also a little weird because I have really bad luck with a lot of things. Like, I can never get people on the phone. I can never seem to get it to work out. So just rolling the dice, I was always rolling, like, the worst numbers possible. I think Dan was rolling my dice for me.
I've always found that
people on the phone, like, he made you roll to put your pants on one leg at a time. Because that's a GMing flaw. That's not a player.
And since he wouldn't give us a gaming story, tell us a gaming story about Dan.
Wait. Ooh. I was going to say that
guys, this was, what, 6 years ago. I don't even really remember that much.
I've found that.
So it wasn't a memorable game.
Rolling the dice.
No, it was a memorable game. It was actually an awesome plot. When we finished the game, I remember being like, dude, I totally want this in a movie. Stat.
So you remember satisfaction with the entire plot. Yeah.
Well, the plot was... Wait. The plot was good. How was the game?
You hear that, Paramount Pictures?
It needs to be made into a movie.
It was actually...
J.J. Abrams, forget him.
It was really we'll make our own movie soon enough.
Yeah.
In Dan's hot tub.
With a glass of wine.
Fear the bubbles.
Set the engines to full, Mr. Repinger. Anyway, I found that
if we make a Star Trek movie, George T.
Oh, go on. I have a question for you, Carla.
Wait, I was talking here.
Yeah,
actually,
I have a question for you, Carla. Actually, how awesome am I?
Go ahead, actually, Carla. I was talking before Luke.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, attention to you. You're a woman.
No, I was just saying, to answer your question about how the game was, I actually really enjoyed the game. I enjoyed being put in situations that you had to work through. You know, we would come up to this wall. Well, how are you going to get around this wall? You can't climb over it. You can't walk around it. You can't go through it.
You can't listen to Run Like Hell because that's all on Dark Side.
Oh!
You know what I'm thinking, Carla? I'm thinking you are the exact same type of gamer I am. You love the situations. You love the problem solving. You hate the stupid in-character stuff. I don't want to talk like somebody else.
Yeah,
because I got bad news.
Huh?
I can barely communicate
in a
as
hobby
myself.
Called role playing.
Oh yeah, really?
As opposed to getting around wall playing.
I got a character.
Games.
He does stuff. Why do I have to talk like him?
Hey, I was just going to say that I found that new players are very intimidated by the dice themselves, and I've never figured out why. Because you know they're always really curious about what to roll. And people are always very helpful, but they always seem very hesitant.
You know,
roll those dice like you own them. You know, just roll it up.
You know what's sad, though? I didn't even know they had dice with more than six sides. Like, four.
Most people don't. Most people don't know that.
Dan whips out the D20, and I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, the term D20 is foreign to most people.
You got to watch when you talk to, like, people about craps. Oh, yeah, you just roll two D6s. What's that?
What's a D6?
That's really not.
Sorry. Who's Tootie?
You roll. They say, well, you just rolled two dice. Well, what kind of die? Two dice? Yeah.
And right there, you've exposed yourself.
Yeah, and then you're like, crap.
You are outed.
If you guys want to win money in Vegas, all you need to do is talk to Tex about the statistics of 2D6, go down and play craps, and you will come home a winner.
I saw those charts.
Don't most gamers know the statistics of 2D6?
The permutations of 2D6 are not that extensive or complicated.
Look, play Settlers of Catan. Settlers of Catan will tell you the statistics of 2D6 right on the board.
Phil, John, and I go to a casino, and then John big balls it up to a table and says, let me show you boys how to...
To my credit, I know how to play craps. However, if you just sit down and see two 11s and a 2... No matter how good you are at playing craps, you have lost.
And then he's like, all right, let's get out of here.
The one time I played roulette.
I'm sorry, 212.
The one time I played roulette, I bet three times, and three times I played, it came up double-aught.
Yeah, it was crap.
I mean, what
are
you playing? Were you playing actual roulette or the electronic
roulette? No, actual
roulette.
We went to the casino, we were wanting to get on a roulette table. They were all taken, except for these two. There was no one on them. I'm like, oh, let's go over there. Not realizing they were $20 tables.
And I've watched Passenger 57, so I bet on black. it was double-aught. I mean, what are the chances
of that?
It
was ridiculous. We were out $60 in less than 2 minutes.
Oh, probably 1 in 36, 1 in 36, and 1 in 30. No, 2. In American casinos, there's 2. I got spoiled. I started roulette in Poland, and they only have one green there.
I've been told that's a distinctly American thing to have the double lot on there. It's a distinctly American
roulette
thing.
Roulette is huge over there. Yeah. That's all they have. They have a couple blackjack tables and some, like...
Well, you think Eastern Bloc would be popular because of the Russian roulette.
No, actually, that's
played
a
with a pistol,
game.
Yeah.
That's
okay, Luke.
You better strap that helmet on.
Lucius, suicide's not funny.
Yeah.
But it's painless.
You as a doctor should know that.
It can't be.
Sometimes.
All right.
You guys obviously don't know MASH.
Now,
No. You guys are too young to know MASH. You youngins.
I'm aware of what the song is. Thank you, sir.
As far as I know, MASH is that game that girls play where they like figured out whether they're going to live in a mansion.
We played that in the bus in grade school.
No, the MASH theme song has lyrics about suicide.
Well, actually, there are no lyrics in the MASH theme song, but if you listen to the actual song
the
itself.
Real song.
Oh, let's move on to something that matters.
I'm going to run up you with this detail.
Now, we're in the Thunderdome of Boredom once again.
All right, Carla. Yeah, I have a question for you. As a newbie gamer, did the rules and the character sheet itself intimidate you?
Yes. Okay, the one thing that I hate every time you guys want to start a new campaign, like, Carla, do you want to play? I hate rolling characters. Too many numbers. So
that's the best part.
Carla.
Seriously.
Characters is like Christmas Eve. It's better than
go ahead and state your complaint, and then I'll tell you the secret to character creation.
From a new gamer,
Dasher Hump Rudolph,
never gaming before, looking at the sheet and having to roll the dice 50 times and deciding what skills you want, where to put your number. This just wasn't for me.
Okay,
if you were turned loose on a character sheet, not knowing the rules, and yeah, I can see that. But if you should have a guide. You should have a guide saying, what do you want to do? Well, that's not a very good guide. But, you know.
All right, before that,
my Choctaw blood makes me excellent.
Nobody's touching the table. That's John. Stop hitting the table with your glass.
What did you say, Adam?
I said, stop hitting the table with your glass.
Not me this time.
This is your table with glass.
All right, Carla, let me tell you Adam's guide to character creation.
Okay.
All right. Step one.
Drink beer.
Scrapping. This should be good.
All right.
Step zero. Drink beer.
Is step two. And decide who you want to be. Do you want to be kill guy? Do you want to be talky guy? Or do you want to be steel guy?
You can be healy guy, too.
You can be healy guy,
depending on the campaign.
Some games.
Yeah.
Science guy. Some smart games. Guy. Science guy
works for Star Trek.
Science guy is you usually just talky guy.
I don't want to be talky guy.
For experienced role players, this is horrible advice, by the way. If you're playing stereotypes, your game.
There's nothing wrong with filling a niche. There's a difference between stereotypes and niche play.
You're trying to think of something brand new.
This is step one, dude.
Evolve into worthlessness.
Yeah. Are you going to be the dude, I guarantee you do this when you play a game. Do you want to be the combat guy or not? I guarantee you go through this entire process.
Phil doesn't. He always knows he wants to be
Phil, Phil stops that step.
Phil skips step one.
Phil skips step one.
He skips step two because step one's drinking beer. Oh, no, he does skip step one. Too, doesn't
he
doesn't.
All right, point being, though. All right, continue, Adam.
Step two, you go to Phil. And you say, Phil, this is what I want to do with my character. Help me min-max my character.
This is also bad advice.
Phil will help you out. Because most of the time, you'll pick something other than kill guy, and Phil's fine with that. Because he has to round out his character using your character.
Phil's character is every character at the table.
You know, a slightly better advice we could offer, start with a simple idea, or one you can relate to.
Go
from there.
Let me run with that, because my big piece of character advice for character creation is the way I create every character I've ever made is I pick one unique and possibly crazy thing that my character has done, and I go from there.
Well, part of the problem that I have, though, is even deciding or is creating a character that is maybe different than me. I always want to create someone that has the same interests as me has things that I like almost every single character.
I would encourage that. You're kind of new at this. I would encourage that because it's easy to role play. You know you more than anybody else, and then you can explore that as time goes on. Maybe you could be boy Carla, and maybe you could be I don't know where that goes from boy Carla.
I haven't said,
No, that is good advice, though. Even experience.
Can we bring home your best friend, Carla?
That is the best comment ever on this podcast, Dan. You win. You win the podcast.
As I was saying, anyway. It's no sin to roleplay a character who has a lot in common with
you. Well, but it's not just that. It's also just hearing you guys talk about, Dan brings up a lot the whole Mary Sue character, or the character who's just good at everything. In
the dice don't let you do that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't be Kara Thrace on D&D 3.5. There's not enough points.
I'm good at everything.
But if you can't do that, how come you guys have talked about people doing that? You guys have talked about people creating Mary Sue characters. So if you can't,
people try to create Mary Sue characters.
When we
but
talk about stuff like that, there's a big difference between the mechanics and then their backstory.
You don't know as.
If I'm going to create a character,
or cheating at the dice.
Yeah, that too.
No. Being Phil and just writing 18s.
Whoops, those dice went off the table. Hey, look at that 18.
I know who that is.
Yeah, there's a big difference between me writing the story where I am Uther S. Kicker, and then that's my character. Yeah. Well, my sheet doesn't actually reflect that, but you know what? I don't care. In the past, I kicked a whole crap load of ass.
My only flaw is that I kicked too much ass.
Let me tell you, you are too new. You were too new to make that character. There's no way you could possibly, as intimidated you are by the system already, You couldn't make a Mary Sue.
Well, that's why. Well, I told Dan for this BattleTech game to just create a character for me because, well, one, I didn't think the game would even. Well, actually, we haven't played it very much. we're living up to the expectations already, but I just didn't want to. Coming up with a backstory is hard for me too.
Okay. This is where I have some advice on this.
Oh, okay.
Roll your character first, and then make your character based on the sheet.
Yeah,
that's not
you
bad.
You have an 18 in intelligence. Okay, what have you done with it? You have a 4 in strength. Okay.
What happened?
You're really weak and really smart. Why?
Right.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with when you're starting out playing.
Which was going to be my step 3, jerks, but you interrupted me.
That's what we do. What you're talking about is not a bad thing. When you start out making characters, there's nothing wrong with starting out as something similar to yourself, and then, or even something similar to something you know, or a fictional character, because it takes a while to get comfortable with the way role-playing works and system works. And before you can find out, you know, it takes a few characters before you can go, okay, well, I think it'd be fun to explore what this person would do in this setting. And, I mean, honestly, myself, a lot of characters I make are either science guy or doctor guy, because that's what I know, and it's really easy for me to fall into that.
Right.
And I break that mold on occasion, but if I'm ever like really quick, oh, we need to roll up a character for this game, we want you to jump in, I'll default to what I know, because that's human nature.
Who here hasn't played Gimli or Aragorn or computer programmer guy?
I played Aragorn when Aragorn was Lucifer, because Lucifer was so much that was much better at that role.
What?
You never seen The Prophecy?
I'm totally confused.
Viggo Mortensen is Lucifer.
Mortensen? That's not a difficult name.
No, it's not.
he's Lucifer.
Maybe
he's,
a real doctor would have pronounced it right.
Huh.
Yeah, the Prophecy's, I like The Prophecy. Christopher Walken, any movie he's in is good.
Never mind, I like it. I'm sorry. About
you've not seen it? Okay, add it to the movie night, Prophecy.
All right, after Lucas done talks about playing Malpractice Man.
Oh my
word. They made a Japanese robot for dentist training.
I saw that.
That could respond to pain and had a sensor if you frauterized it.
I saw that.
Is it like The Simpsons? Is it Mr. Sparkle?
I don't know. As far as I can tell, it's like a Nexus 1, Nexus 1.5 replica.
They had it on Gizmodo and they had all kinds of scene jokes about how it looks like it's made for something else instead.
The robot's ready to F.
The robot's been ready to F. It's so tight.
Oh, it's a pleasure model used on military bases off world.
This robot with an open mouth. A female robot with an open mouth.
Nice. I know what I should do with that.
Yeah. Nice. It looks really wrong.
Yeah, so back to New Gamers.
Carla, you're new to Fear the Boot. We tangentialize a lot.
No. I know you guys do.
About
I'm
sex robots
to
all the time.
Back.
Whoa.
That's noble.
So we can move on to the last topic.
I suppose that's a common.
All right. So, Carla, what else do you have to say about your gaming experiences?
Well, I'd like to have more of them if we could keep games going.
If you had more of them, you would not feel so uncomfortable.
Probably not. No.
And even if we switch systems, I mean, the basics are always the same. Make a character with something unique. Something you can play and stay in character with and enjoy it. Have fun with it.
Well, like I was saying earlier, like Adam was saying as well, I really do enjoy the problem solving. Like the last BattleTech game we did play, Dan started getting into some scenarios for us to start deciding where we wanted to go with it. And it's starting to get more interesting. But I also like the combat aspect of it. I know the rest of you don't, but.
Whoa.
I like combat.
I love combat. I don't like combat on Mega Mech. I found that out.
Wiener.
Not.
I like combat both Mega Mech.
I thought it was
Mechs
cool
everywhere.
In Mega Mech.
If I'm going to play a miniatures game, I'd like Mega Mech. But for a role-playing game, it detaches me too much. I'm too far away. It doesn't feel right.
I understand where you're coming from. But having been the man who for over a decade had to carry the 70-pound quote-unquote BattleTech bag, as we came to call it, and keep track of all the chits and set up all the maps and go through these 6-hour combats.
Hey. It was still six. It was almost 6 hours anyway. It's not like it was a whole big reduction.
Oh, significantly shorter than that. Significantly. And we had a lot more units involved than I would normally involve.
Well, you guys are lucky coming into this part of it, because when the first games that I did play with Dan, they were 7-8 hour games.
I don't mind
not
long
combat,
games, but
just...
No, I like long games.
Oh,
that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Dan's sister's got a great saying that your mind can only take what the ass can endure. It's so true.
I can play long games as long as they're interesting.
Yeah, I only run my games at 2.5.
Star Trek does not have long combat, because if somebody's hit by a phaser or disruptor, that's pretty much it.
But it wasn't even just combat, it was the whole game.
Oh, yeah, right, but I'm saying it's the role-playing aspects, it wasn't the combat aspects. Our final topic for tonight
is explaining the hobby to outsiders. And this one, our previous topic may have offered some kind of insight into the mind of a new gamer for experienced gamers. But in some way, with having Carla sitting there, I realized that probably there may be more information there for new gamers than experienced ones. But here, we are preaching to the converted. This is information for the gamer. You are at work. There's somebody you work with who's maybe a little bit dorky who might get into this kind of thing. And they ask you, what is it you do with your time? Or you're sitting there at Thanksgiving and mom or grandma asks, so what is that book that just happened to fall out of your backpack? Explaining role-playing games as a hobby to people that have absolutely no concept what a role-playing game is outside of the horrible preconceived notion of people murdering each other in the sewers over D&D.
My first action is denial.
I didn't.
That's a swift action. Yeah. Doesn't even take a rack.
That's a swift action.
I won initiative, bitch.
I think it's a free action, actually. I just had this happen at my secondary work.
Okay.
As there was a new person was my tech and brings me the patient's chart, and I'm back in my office reading Promethean the Created, and she comes up and sees it and like, oh, that's a big book you're reading. What's all that about? And then I'm like, it's about tabletop gaming. Like board gaming? Like, yeah, kinda. That's a pretty big book for that. You're right. So that patient, huh? And I went from
avoidance,
there.
Deflecting the question.
So far we have denial and deflecting the question.
Well, I'll have outright lies. I can add to this conversation.
Okay, I'm not advocating this solution.
It depends. If they corner you and they're like, well, let's say you're working in an office and you're like, okay, well, it's podcast night, I gotta go. Well, what do you podcast about?
Yeah.
Because you really can't lie about that.
Think this is difficult at work? I'm sitting there in Sunday school. I teach a Sunday school class, and I'll mention, oh, yeah, I do this kind of internet radio thing. Really? What about?
The devil.
We follow demons.
That would
demons
be my quick immediate response.
Yeah. Exactly.
I play these games where we worship the devil and then murder each other in suicide pass.
In my spare time, I summon Satan. How does everybody feel
about
that?
He's not happy to be summoned. Let me just go out and say that.
Yeah, if Ultimate taught us nothing else.
Did the demons kill you when they were summoned in Ultimate?
No, it's just when you summon the Fire Lord, he gets really pissed off and starts trying to destroy the world. But
when you summon the Shadow Lords in Ultima 5, they try to kill you too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have to know their names.
Okay.
Astaroth, Nosfenter, and Falunay, for anyone who cares.
Wow!
Get out.
No. I'm staying here.
I will say, in my own office, my staff know that I game and don't, you know, they
accept
they don't
you
care.
For who you
they,
are.
They have to because I pay them.
Well,
it doesn't matter if they like me or if. What's that book you're
reading?
Option
number two, pay people to like you.
This is Promethean the Created. What's that? It's a role playing game. Oh, okay. Yep. Go back up front. Answer the phone.
The best solution that I have found to this is start with things that people know and understand.
Yeah.
Like Star Trek.
No, I don't even start there. No,
I don't even mean setting-wise, because we're not talking settings anymore.
I don't even start with that.
I mean, if somebody, like, I'm sitting there, and I think I mentioned this story on a previous episode. I was at a Christmas party for work, and there was a guy I was talking to who happened to mention video games. And so it's like, okay, he asked me what my podcast was about, so I started working him one step at a time from video games into role-playing games. And okay. You play video games. What video games have you played? Well, have you ever played Dawn of War? Well, did you know Dawn of War is based on a tabletop game called Warhammer 40,000? And then tried to work from that into role-playing games. If I'm talking to somebody who knows nothing about role-playing games at all, in fact, I just went through this trying to reserve the venue.
Yeah, tell this story. It's funny.
For Fear the Con. And I went in there, and they said, what do you want this location for?
Whoa, skip ahead. We just told the story last episode. Well, skip to the point.
The point being, though,
I thought he told it at dinner tonight.
I think I told it in episode two, three episodes ago.
I'll just cut it.
But the point being, though, that when I told these people what it is we were doing, I had to start with something they understood. It was an old lady and a middle-aged woman who probably knew nothing about video games.
What do you know about menopause?
Because I got a game for you. It's called Monostatic.
But I basically
boiled it down to
we play it's tabletop games, and they said, well, like board games, and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like that. They're really complex, but it's basically like that.
Really? That's not how I go about it. Usually if somebody's really pressing me for an answer, I typically start off with, okay, let me paint the scenario. Let me tell you a story, and then let me kind of ask where you would go with it. All right, you're standing on the edge of a cliff. There's an angry mob with pitchforks and torches, and they kind of approach you, and they don't look very happy. What would you do? And then usually after some floundering, they ask some questions, and then they usually come up with something. It doesn't really matter what they come up with.
Right.
But at that point, after they've done something, I'm like, okay, now think about this. Think about that you have just played that character for 4 hours, and the plot actually means something. Because we just a little bit of role playing.
I usually start with board games and work down work up.
I don't like working up.
Well, because it's
there's too much of a stigma with other stuff, so I like to jump right in and not tell them what's going on.
Well, the thing about board games have no such stigma.
Some board games don't have any stigma.
I'll say, well, like take chess. Okay.
The Ouija board is not popular with the church groups.
Well, I don't know that I count as a board game either. But let's take like chess, and I'll say, you know, okay, let's say the knight was somebody in particular, that the knight was Sir Gawain.
William Shatner,
yes.
Oh, Sir Gawain, the Green Knight.
He's a torn Sir shaman Gawain, now. Shows lightning.
My not elf mohawk.
or I'll say, imagine if, you know, the knight could move into the queen where it should capture the queen. the queen seduces the knight and the...
Wait a minute, that's not funny
This
anymore.
Is King Arthur all
yeah,
over
this is
again.
King Arthur.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then there's this creepy love triangle.
But
where all three are moving into each other.
I try to start with something they can relate to and work up.
And Dragon Orgy.
Now, sometimes though, I go the Adam route where I'll say, okay, I know the person's interested in something in particular, so I'll take your mob scenario, or once again, if it's something like Star Trek, I'll say, look, it's like a really, it's one part sort of board game, it's one part really complex simulation, it's one part imagination.
Unless you're Phil.
Well,
then it's all.
And the one thing, I try to avoid anything that's got stigma to it. I do not say the phrase Dungeons and Dragons.
No, it's bad.
No, that's a dead giveaway.
Death trap.
I would avoid that.
It's too much emotional baggage with it. I do not say role play, because once again, people don't understand what that means.
Most people I know have never heard the term before.
Or think it's sexual.
They think it's for the bedroom.
I say,
if you're in the business setting, they think that you're actually role-playing a scenario, like in a managerial sense.
See, and that's...
You know what? I'm okay with it, but...
That's a D20 to fire your subordinate.
That's another thing that I found, is that with most people, they have role-played at some point in their life. That on a job interview, somebody will ask them, well, let's say that an employee approaches you with this problem, what would you do?
Well, hey, I'm a paladin with 18 charisma.
I mean...
You can't use the helm of
disinformation. I turn evil. I turn undead.
But,
sorry,
you know,
I detect evil. I turn undead.
You've got a role-playing game right there. When you see three little girls playing house.
MD?
Which one's Cuddy?
Teehee.
John, you and I.
No,
it's crazy.
We get the same joke every time I say this. But
you never said this
before. You never brought that up.
This would be number one.
Every one time.
That is BS, and listeners will back me up on this. I have brought up the little kids playing house.
Not since I've been on the podcast, I'll tell you that.
You know, the sad thing about listeners is that they will back me up on this.
Yeah.
Back me up, too, because
we'll
I said
what remember
said,
the Dracula debate?
That's what they always
Chris
think anyway.
Keith Curtis? Is
yeah.
Like,
remember the Pink Floyd debate?
Until I went
yeah,
and I lost. I lost horribly.
I screwed it up earlier today. I bundled the albums that no one caught me on it, so I didn't say anything.
All right.
Let me bring in here. You're in a pretty unique position here. Speaking of stigma, let's talk about D&D and the devil. Circa the 80s.
D&D and Blackleaf.
Circa the 80s and the Jack Trick Chick Tracks and all that crap that comes, the baggage that comes along with role-playing games and going to church. People don't understand because people have been educated that this is an evil thing, and mostly.
I could actually talk at length about this and be wildly off topic.
If only we had a podcast.
only we had some media.
This would have to be a bonus episode unto itself, because just talking to people, trying at church to talk to people about a wide variety of secular forms of entertainment, even as an author. You have the amount of pressure within a church to write only books that are religious in nature, as opposed to writing, and I'm not talking anything anti, you know, religion or whatever, but just writing something that's generically secular. There's an enormous pressure, but I could do a whole bonus episode on that.
Well, the 14th commandment was, if you know, thou shalt not accept a roll on the floor. You have to roll on the table.
Yeah, and if, I would take that as canon.
Thank you, Moses.
It sounds reasonable to me.
But part of it is I don't bring it up because the stigma
is terrible.
The stigma is so strong that when people ask me what is it that I do, I typically will try and once again go with something they understand and can't argue
so
with.
So where did the whole negativity towards D&D come from?
Well,
like, is it more just people not understanding it and just assuming it was a bad thing, or was it more the type of individuals who played it tend to have shady backgrounds?
No, I think this was more, and there are people that have really studied this inside now and have published even like papers on this and crap, but my precursory understanding is that D&D was first introduced, I mean, what was it, 1970s or something like that?
I believe it was 75.
Right around 75, 77.
Yeah, right, all right, so somewhere in the mid-70s. And this was a new kind of hobby that people really didn't understand. And because of the fact that it was a fantasy setting, it had a lot of occultic undertones.
But wait, you know.
You had magic, you had monsters, and then there was...
You had nudity on covers, even. You had a sacrifice on an altar with the bare breasts on one of the early great role
plays. Then there was
early
also
D&D covers.
They had some really...
Got me through some long nights.
and I will have to say, they did not help their cause. You're correct.
Well,
between the covers, between some of the optional material they had, like in the grimoire and such, they did have some really outrageous graphic stuff.
Well, look, here's the thing. They talked about summoning demons and devils with magic, but this thing didn't... It was probably a decade into gaming's birth before there was a blowback,
right.
Before
and
it blew up.
Well, and one of the big things that set it off was there was these bunch of guys that went down into the sewers behind a university, and a guy got murdered. And they claimed later that, oh, this was because of role-playing games.
So it began.
Yeah, and so
it
began.
The dude was too stupid to just write a new character sheet when they killed his other one.
But you know what's weird is I knew people in college who were gamers who went down to the steam tunnels to game, ridiculously so. I mean, I don't know what the appeal is. They called it Norfair from Metroid. Whatever. Sorry.
That's actually kind of funny.
Norfair.
Well, don't worry. Nobody died, so it is funny.
I would go to Brinstar. No, I would go to Torian. I'd go to the computer lab and be like, it's Torian. Mother Brain is over here. It's an email server. We got to shoot 5 missiles at it.
Oh, crap. It's the exchange server. Yes. Everybody run.
And suddenly the exchange server runs out of the room and comes back atop a Tyrannosaurus-like body.
Oh, God. The security guard's coming. Time bomb. Get out fast.
Nice.
Oh, man. Super Metroid was so good.
Yes, it was so
good. All the secret stuff that they didn't tell you how to do, but you have to watch the demo and show, like, if I have 4 bombs left and I roll into a ball and do this, I'll recharge all my power.
You can't have 4 bombs.
Well, you know what I'm... 4 missiles. You know what I'm talking about.
Hey.
Anyway.
You guys know my stuff.
But to answer your question, Luke, that if somebody does ask me, what is your stuff about, I usually tell them, I just use the blanket answer, it's about tabletop gaming. Now, if somebody...
A wise idea.
If somebody presses me, well, what do you mean? Do you mean, like, chutes and ladders and Monopoly? And then I'll say...
Oh, that means that they're a gamer in training.
I am the shoe.
Well, and see, and then at that point, now, okay, I understand the things we have in common. So I say, well, it's kind of like that, but there's a lot more complexity.
Imagine you're the top hat in Monopoly.
Yeah.
You are on Atlantic.
Well, imagine if, like, you land on Boardwalk, which somebody else owns, but there was some way that you could simply sneak past his property.
Would you loot them and take their stuff?
And I'll
kill them and take their stuff?
You could bomb the hotel.
And I'll say, you know, just imagine if you just kept adding rules and adding rules and adding rules until effectively this became almost like a game of make-believe.
Well,
and day dawns
and
is a
people
bathtub.
Will understand that.
Well, just to interject, since I don't have a whole lot of friends who do, you know, participate in role-playing games, and I work with a ton of people who know nothing about it, I have to frequently explain what it is my husband does with his friends once a week when recording his podcast.
Boof.
Oh,
well,
whoa,
yeah,
whoa.
Besides Goofy.
Oh, yeah, G-rated.
I see Unicorn half deployed over there.
I don't even bring up the Rainbow Bridges because that raises questions too. But
what do you tell them?
Well, basically, I just start off telling them, well, it's kind of like acting, but not the big movie production acting you think of. Each person has a character and they work through scenarios using that character. And some people choose to act out with the voices. Other people just choose to talk it out.
Be Adam.
Well, yeah, hey, be Adam or
hey,
me.
Hey,
and just work through the scenario. So that seems to to sink in to most people that I talk to. Just say, you know, it's kind of like acting on a low level and they're working through games, you know, or through scenarios. And that seems to work. I don't mention tabletop games.
You know, what I've really found is the actual meat and potatoes of what a role-playing game is, most people have no problem with. It's the words. You have to watch your words.
Yeah. It's the diction.
If you say role-playing game or you say Dungeons and Dragons, then boom, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had an emotional reaction. You are not going to back them out of
it. But you know what? It's getting better. It is in the last decade, it has improved significantly.
Well, yeah, because I've even mentioned to some people, well, have you heard of Dungeons & Dragons? They're like, oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And it's not like...
Back in the days when there was a Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, those were the days to mention Dungeons & Dragons, because that was awesome.
Well, you know what the thing is about that, though? I think that is in direct relation to the changing face of the emerging dork.
Yeah, well, being a dork is cool now.
Right.
Look at half of this podcast.
Well, cause
the prom king and the captain of the football team.
Hey, what's up?
Yo, me too.
I was an outcast nerd, but of course there's
half and half then.
That's 10 years later.
Yeah, I wasn't an outcast nerd, but I wasn't either of those things because I was awesome on my own.
Oh, okay.
Hey, just because I was a captain of the football team and on many prom and homecoming court doesn't mean I wasn't master of my own domain.
I was busy with the ladies, Luke. I didn't have time for your shallow meetings.
Oh, you know, the kick never ever gets any action.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines from Friends has to be, like, oh, we have a friend named Gandalf. He's awesome because he's the wizard of fun. Every time he comes, he makes fun. And they're like, wait, do you know who Gandalf is? They're
wait a second. No, hang on 1 second. You watch Friends?
Nah.
I did back in high school. Anyway, he's like, wait, who's Gandalf? I was like, didn't you read The Lord of the Rings in high school? Oh, no, I was too busy having sex.
Which is true.
True. Yeah, it's very true.
No, it's not. I read Lord of the Rings multiple times.
While you were having sex.
Yes.
Oh, man.
I could tell you things about the places in Star Wars that I've...
Tatooine is a subtle...
No.
Sexual
the trench run. It's amazing.
You know, there are a lot of filmographers who would argue that entire scene with the Death Star is one huge sexual allegory.
You know, a lot of
because the X-wings and the Y-wings are flying towards
what the
huge
wing-shaped
thing. And
the exhaust port is 2 meters wide. I don't know what they've been dipping in.
If you listen to the dialogue, there's a lot of "Pull out, Luke! Pull out!"
Oh, I can hold it.
Oh, Porkins, you poor bastard.
Porkins.
Just a few more seconds.
Have you guys seen the Photoshop picture of it's
Never
Porkins?
Forget,
but he's
eating KFC. It's great.
Man, that guy was so bad.
I love Porkins.
He died. I'm sad he's dead.
Oh, he
this IMDb picture, he's got like a top hat and a cane. He looks like a complete vamp.
Vamp!
Yes.
Did you guys hear Evel Knievel died too?
Yeah, I saw that. But only after him and Kanye West settled their suit, which makes me, you know, happy.
I'm good that they resolved their differences.
Me too. Yeah, it was really had me upset. All right, anyways, getting back to the subject at hand.
What subject?
I think the real issue here is avoiding certain terms, finding out what you have in common with the person, and explaining it from that angle.
Speaking of terms, even the term gamer has been distorted these days. When I met my wife, and I... Right off the bat, I tell him, like, I am a gamer. I like games, board games, et cetera, et cetera. And she's like, are you a gamer like those guys on MTV True Life Gamers? Where
what the hell
all
is that?
Well, apparently it was a True Life series where they document people who are in subcultures or what have you. So it follows around people who are gamers. But their version wasn't role-playing. It was all video gamers, people who are obsessed with video games. That's all they do. And I'm like, no, I'm not like that.
And these TV shows usually pick the worst stereotypes. I mean... MTV's real
Look,
world.
Since I've been married...
There was nothing real about...
I've watched a lot of MTV True Life, and they're actually fairly informed. Of all the things on MTV, it's probably the most watchable thing, because they're fairly informative about living life. Like, True Life, I have Tourette's, and True Life, I'm blah, blah, blah. It's all...
the show we saw? The Tourette's show? We turned on the television, there are these kids like screaming out obscenities and stuff, and it was something about...
That was on
living
HBO.
With, oh, it was that like was living HBO. With Tourette's. I'm like, what? What is this?
I don't know. A lot of this advice seems to boil down, at least to me, it boils down to know the person you're talking to.
Yeah.
Like,
know your audience.
Know your audience and know how to escape the emotional stigmas.
Look, there's a theme that's been weaving out in and out of the last few episodes. And one thing that I like to say is I would love to see when role-playing games, it's cool to be a dork in gaming as much as it is accepted to be the guy who paints himself at a football game or is obsessed with fantasy football, because it is the same thing. It is the same thing, just in different forms. And I don't know if we'll ever get there. I don't know if it'll ever be accepted.
Well, I think
I think we've already made 100% progress from when Dan grew up.
Well, yeah.
Back in the 40s. Back in the Great Depression. Well, the Dust Bowl was raging.
And I think part
Wild West.
Really, the challenge there lies with we as gamers. That the question is, do we as gamers, are we going to have the energy and the articulation to take our hobby to other people?
And I heard you guys talking last episode about the entire subculture.
Yeah,
we talk about both sides.
There's
of our
a prop. There's a serious disconnect somewhere here. Along the line. Yeah. There.
And that's what I'm saying is that's part of my concern, that I think that we as a culture have become so standoffish, so insular, so hostile almost that it's, you know,
preemptively defensive.
Yeah.
See, it's that stuff that drove people into nerdery starting out with is hostile attitudes, bullying. You go and escape into your own world with your nerd friends. You play role-playing games.
And you hate anyone that's not part of it.
Unless you're like me or John, who were popular and still played role-playing games.
Right. And
I don't have a problem with the popular kids. I mean.
So like I said, I think this falls back to us. The question is, do we have the ability to make gaming accessible and understandable to the masses? Can we go to someone like grandma and explain to her in a couple sentences kind of what gaming is? Say, hey, you know those video games you see me playing on the TV? Well, imagine that in a board game fashion. Or imagine if we sat around at the table as a family playing out those kinds of things.
Start with the Wii.
Yeah,
start with the Wii. The Wii was a big hit at Thanksgiving with my family, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, with my father-in-law, 75-year-old man, using the Wii, thought he was going to break a hip. That's not a joke.
All righty. I think that's about it for this subject. So thank you guys for tuning in. And
good. I need to evacuate 3 Bud Light.
All righty. While Adam does that, as for us, you guys, we will catch you next time.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.